Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night discussion group on October 29th, 2013, 2 days before Halloween. Tonight we're going to be discussing Steve Ozenich's book, The Great Pain Deception again, chapter 11, Timing of the Onset, Don't Beware, Be Aware. And this is going to be a good discussion. We got a lot of great guys that's joined us tonight. A lot of people just came back, and we really appreciate that. I do got to say the main disclaimer. Before we start, I need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. And with that being said, we're going to get right into it and let Bruce tell us some of the summary. And go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I'm going to try and summarize chapter 11, The Timing of the Onset, Don't Be Aware, Beware, Be Aware, from Steve Ozenich's Great Pain Deception. But it's a chapter packed with, it's a dense chapter packed with all kinds of examples of the onset of pain, many of which are worthy subjects for discussion in their own right. And it harkens back to, I think, chapter 2, actually, with the definitions of phase 1, 2, 3, and 4 TMS on page 19 and 20. But Steve starts by saying, under times of great stress, hidden anger may rise so high that we can experience symptoms in real time while the cause remains outside our awareness. However, the majority of cases I've seen have been delayed onset of symptomology, delayed reactions to life changes, as one of Dr. Sarno's patients talks about at the top of the page, at the start of the chapter. Burnaby says that, you know, at that time I had, for the first time in my life, the feeling to have reached the position I deserved. Strange thing that some months later, I had to leave my job because of my illness, that is chronic pain. It was at the very moment of achievement that he had to face the music and resolve these issues. And Steve says that when speaking with people about their lives, people in severe pain often tell me, when I was younger, my parents divorced or were missing or unloving. I was adopted. My mother or father or siblings died. I was molested or beaten. I had nightmares of being abandoned. My parent was an alcoholic. My parents fought incessantly and were highly critical of me. Boy, does that sound familiar. I came from a dysfunctional family. My mother or father is dying. My child is ill, died or is ill. And Steve says that these experiences leave emotional memories and pave the way for rage to be ignited later on by a trigger. The scars that we can't see are the most painful cut. The earlier in life, the deeper the wound. Our childhood development strongly shapes how we cope with stress later in life. Well, at the top of the page in a box, Steve emphasizes two cautions people who might be about to experience TMS symptoms. He says, be aware of current status during stressful periods. And then he says phases 1, 2, and 3 TMS. And second, he says, be aware of life's quality after stressful periods, phase 4 TMS. Well, this harkens back to an earlier chapter, where Steve defines phase 1, 2, and 3, and 4 TMS. And under a section called Timing of the Symptoms on page 19 and 20, he says phase 1 TMS is acute threshold TMS. There's current high tension levels, no physical incident, acute rapid onset. And phase 2, he calls blood in the water TMS, where there are current high tension levels and a physical trigger involved with lingering pain. That's an injury that you have, like you fall on the ice or you bang your arm against something and then you blame your chronic pain on that injury. And then there's phase three TMS, backdoor TMS. That's where their current high tension levels and an old injury seemingly resurfaces, like, oh, that old broken leg of mine, it's starting to act up now 10 years later. And the body the mind locates the pain at the site of the old original injury. And the fourth phase of TMS, Steve calls after the storm TMS. And that's the most common. Pain following a period of high tension levels, the storm after the calm, he calls it. Most common TMS patterns, according to Steve, during downtime following prolonged periods of stress, this expression of TMS reveals the emotions that have been pushed aside, I wrote in, repressed, emotions that compartmentalized into the body in order to persevere through the stressful period. Then your mind is distracted with your current problems, so you're pushing away all of these feelings that you would rather not deal with or are socially unacceptable, like a tantruming child that, like Steve says someplace in this chapter, where he realized that he really wanted to kill the doctor, the doctors who had paralyzed his wife. Next, Steve talks about real-time onset, phase one TMS, and he calls it teed off. And he uses a number of examples of phase one TMS, where the pain starts due to an acute threshold, current high tension levels, and then you just start to feel it. And he gives examples of Tiger Woods' neck injury while engaged in a acrimonious public divorce that we all know about, with various people coming in to comment on his habits, I believe, some of his former girlfriends. And then what Steve calls the 9/11 syndrome, where people have severe back spasms on viewing the jets flying into the World Trade Center. And then he cites Thomas Jefferson's severe migraines, which began following the death of his wife. And then he talks about a man, I think a friend of his or someone he knew, he was acquainted with, holding his legs in a fetal posture, rolling on the floor in pain, on the same day that he lost his house. And I think Jay knew someone like that. And he says that there's a pause with phase four TMS. And he introduces the concept of the holiday syndrome, leisure sickness, where the body at work in a stressful job is locked into survival mode and has trouble readjusting to leisure time. This results in pain during holiday or vacation. And then he cites the Dutch psychology professor, Ad Vingerholtz, that one possibility for this kind of situation is a kind of competition for symptom and perception. There is a competition between the information from the outside world, external information, and information from the body, internal information. I wrote, in other words, when you are focused on a particular task, such as a career or project, you cannot simultaneously focus on your personal needs. You've shoved them off the table, and so they go unattended. Once the external focus is taken away, that is the end of the crisis, the end of the problem, or even in Burnaby's case, when he's achieved, when that external focus is taken away, all those internals that were pushed aside come tumbling out. The repressed now demands to be expressed. And what does it express itself as? Chronic pain or TMS. Vingerholtz also reported the most common effects of this process were pain, migraines, fatigue, and nausea. And what were the most frequent, what was the most common personality characteristic of people who exhibited these symptoms? Perfectionism. Mm. Aha. And this is what Steve calls phase four TMS. Pain can strike during periods of high tension, but in a very mysterious fashion, the mind often utilizes after tension in order to do its bitching and moaning. When it is no longer focused on the task at hand, as Vingerhoetz has hypothesized, this is the nuclear blast phenomenon. Yeah, Steve is always coming up with these nice little succinct metaphorical ways of describing things. He says, this is the nuclear blast phenomenon. The damage comes from the backlash of the energy expansion. And he gives examples here of Sheryl Crow getting a lump in her breast a couple of weeks after a breakup with Lance Armstrong. In other words, the relationship was probably falling apart for a long time, and she was repressing, and then the breakup was the final trigger. This is just my way of reading it. Steve talks about a man in a restaurant he met in 2006 whose back pain had started 2 days after his divorce was finalized. No coincidence there. And he has another section called Smooth Running, Windy Sailing, where Steve talks about how TMS pain symptoms often begins when things seem to be going well at certain levels of life after achievement. That would be Burnaby's case at the start of the chapter. One of the examples that Steve gives of this phenomenon is the dangers of retirement. Steve's friend Graham, who went TMS critical just 1 week after he prioritized his finances and felt relatively sure of a comfortable life. And then he talks about how Tiger Woods' pain began in 2004 when he calls it triple bogey in 04, when Tiger lost his world number one ranking. His father and best friend became terminally ill, and he was about to get married, although judging from subsequent events, he probably didn't want to. And he supposedly Tiger injured his back, sleeping in an awkward manner on an airplane. At least that's what he told the interviewer.
Let me cut in on you just for a minute. Hold your place right there, because you have told us a ton of information, and I know we're going to come back to it. But you mentioned a while ago, Bruce, the nuclear blast phenomenon, and I want to read out for just a minute what it says here on page 172. It's about halfway through the page. He says, pain can strike during periods of high tension, but in a very mysterious fashion, the mind often utilizes after tension in order to do its bitching and moaning. When it is no longer focused on the task at hand, as Vingerhoetz had hypothesized, this is the nuclear blast phenomenon. The damage comes from the backlash of the energy expansion. Now, is this not the part where when all hard things is happening, you're okay, and then when everything seems to be calming down, ain't this, and then that's when the pain or illness or whatever it might be hits you?
Steve seems to think it's during the dead time, after the crisis is over, that the survival instinct, the fight, flight, freeze instinct continues.
So he brought Sheryl Crow up in that, right?
Sheryl Crow was an example.
Yeah, and Lance Armstrong. Yeah, she's right above it on page 172.
This was phase four TMS, because she says that during their relationship, he hypothesizes, of course, this is armchair psychology, that my armchair psychology too, that during their relationship, it was probably not that ducky, and that's why it ended. So Sheryl was probably doing a lot of stuffing. Probably both of them were. in order to make it work. And so when it ended, that gave her some downtime that caused this autoimmune disorder.
But he also talked about how in divorces and stuff, how, you know, it might start 2 or 3 years, you might start going downhill 2 or 3 years before the divorce actually happened. So Cheryl could have been, you know, getting symptoms of whatever, you know, the cancer was way before the divorce. It's just, it happened right after the divorce is when she found out, right?
Well, bingo. I knew a woman who lived here about 6 blocks from me who had been married for 7 years, kind of a troubled, a troubled 7 years. And he was making a lot of money and she was going to school. And they were fighting like the devil every night. And then when she finally did get the energy together to leave him and get the divorce, bingo, breast cancer. She had to have a, just like that. It was like, and
yeah, this is pretty
extreme.
She was
obviously in a limbo state. They'd been living under the same roof for 2 years without talking, except fighting. You know, this was a long time that she'd been under this stress before it manifested. But that was, when did it manifest? The moment she decided to get the divorce. The relief came. And then I guess it came out of the closet. It had nowhere to go.
Exactly.
It was
Tom's
no longer
got something
engaged
to say.
In the bad relationship. And so it turned on her, whatever she'd been doing to herself all those years.
It's like we have a natural response. Part of our stress response just represses everything. It pushes it down. It pushes down all the pain. And then finally, when that external stress is gone, all of a sudden, that's when the bucket of rage is ready to boil over. And that's when it starts coming out.
Well, bingo. In my case, I had been taking care of my mother for 5 years with Alzheimer's and had not had any significant symptoms. I could walk through a burning building because of this survival mode, protecting your center, protecting your family. And then she dies and there's a big pause and I have nothing but time on my hands to go running. And then I start feeling sciatica and the sciatica builds and builds and builds till bingo, massive back attack. It just, obviously I'd been probably very angry for those 5 years because it was interfering with my life in a big way, but all the while being good, you know, for the sake of your self-image and all kinds of things like not wanting to be a bad boy, all these conditioned responses from childhood. And then you realize, what I realize now is that it wasn't just that 5 year repression. It was the repression of the relationship with the parents going back 50 years before then that made that such a hard row to hoe. But that's classic phase four, though. And that's, like Steve says, it's the most common one that we see.
Can anyone else relate to that? Anyone else notice that their TMS popped up after the big stressful event or once they had a chance to relax?
Yes, I can relate to that. This is Jay, and I can relate to that. Several times throughout my life, I've had, some pretty heavy stuff going on. And maybe several days or maybe a week or so after it has subsided, then I'll have an attack or something. And no exact examples come to that, but, you know, it's just the way I'm thinking tonight. I just don't have an exact example right on top of my head, but I do know that has happened to me more than once.
Well, Jay, what about like triggers from past traumas? Like it might have been, you know, like 10, 15 years earlier, 5 years earlier, and then, you know, something happened, and all of a sudden, you know, you all of a sudden you might have jumped, or you might have got mad, and later on when you thought about it, you thought, well, that was from, you know, that was from 10 years ago, from an incident that happened 10 years ago. Has anybody ever had anything like that happen to them? To where all of a sudden, you know, you're out walking, you go and see some friends, you go and talk to some in-laws or something, and somebody does something, and it hits a trigger in you. And what it does, all of a sudden, you have this conditioned response, and then you get angry, or you get upset, you feel pain, or whatever. But it was from an incident that happened 10 years prior, 15 years prior, 5 years prior. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
It does. Sure.
Well, that whole list of it.
Who was it?
It's your Enjoy.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm really relating to on this is that I was looking at what he talked about, the young mother, the girl on Gilmore Girls, saying that first she was a child with all the troubles of a child, and then for a very brief time she was a real person, and then all of a sudden she was a mom, you know, with all these little narcissistic creatures, you know, hanging on to her. And I can, oh, man, you know, it's funny, you know, I guess I assumed when I was a kid, oh, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be independent and I'm going to be able to do what I want. All of a sudden, you're trapped again. So that's exactly, I think, what you're talking about here is just something just triggers you back into a childhood state. And I suppose you could call that a part, since I seem to be the parts lady. But you know, all of a sudden, you're just a little kid again, and you're expected to sublimate all your needs to some other little kid. Well, you know what happens there. A scrap happens is what it is. Or you repress your little kid and refuse to choose. Well, I can't do that. That would be, I'd be a bad mom, right? And yeah. But you still have the feelings, and it still leaks all over. Yeah, this is great stuff. Yeah, he's such a good author, isn't he, Steve? I'm really glad we're doing this book. Yeah, that's all I got to say at the moment. Thanks.
So many layers and so much pressure on mothers. Absolutely. That gigantic superego.
There's huge pressures on men in a marital situation where there's a new baby arrives, and I don't think most people realize that. This is something that my husband and I realized when we were really young, and we've noticed it 1,000 times since. And that is that the mom will bond to the baby, and all of a sudden that poor young dad is left on the outside looking in. And he thought there was going to be three of them all bonded. But that doesn't happen as easily as you think, you know.
That's so, the critical so that's, point in a lot of relationships.
Yeah, you see a lot of...
takes off.
You see a lot of young fathers out in the bar, you know, complaining that she won't even let me touch him. You know, like she and that man. Yeah, and it's very hard. Children are a great test, I think. And we have to appreciate that and be really, really good to each other if we're parents in that situation. And that'll mean that we can be better to our kids. Oh, yeah. Life.
Steve says that the pregnancy is in essence the sudden change from being a girl to becoming a woman, from energy flowing into self at the center, the princess, I guess, to energy flowing out as a caretaker for the new king or queen of the house.
Yeah.
And a woman's baby's birth and later the lives of her toddlers invade her proximic space, creating a great demand on her. The anxious individual enjoys people, but not in her face. She loves new people around, but not too close. The new child has now changed this, turned her world inside out. She's no longer the center, she's the caregiver. And that's a point at which, that's what Steve was talking there in that section about how often pregnancy is like the beginning of back problems. How it's almost routine to give someone a back surgery after they've given birth. And he's saying it's got to do with this shift in perspective that the woman is undergoing. Maybe some women could comment on this more than myself. I was reading this and I was thinking there must be some inputs out there from the feminine half of our membership on this subject, because it's kind of left me behind. I could empathize, but not enter into the same way.
Any women want to jump in? If you do, you can also go to tmswiki.org/chat and type your comment in there, or typing into the meeting chat, wherever you want.
Okay, that was
well, I say something because you know me, I've always got an opinion, but I'm sorry, I kind of missed what we were talking about there. It was
about bearing a child and how the women have feelings of isolation, the crying, different biological feelings a woman goes through.
Steve
that can
just
create
says
TMS.
That for many women, TMS begins during or after pregnancy.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, you know, what happened with me is, I mean, I was only 21 when my first child was born, and I wasn't all that mature. I really wasn't. And maybe not even normally for a 21-year-old, for all I know. And you know, you say that, okay, you used to be the center of your universe, but now all of a sudden you're not, and you're the caregiver. Well, parts of you are the caregiver, but there's parts that are still in that mode of I am the center of the universe. I am what matters, you know, and it's a real battle. I mean, I love my kids to death, but I don't think at that age I was a very good mom, because much as I loved them, I was constantly wishing they'd shut up and stop leaking at both ends. And, you know, like I used to try and sit, I used to smoke in the face. I used to try and sit down and have a cup of coffee and a cigarette and read for 5 minutes. And you think I could accomplish that in a day? Because I had two kids quite close together, eh? And I used to think to myself, I'm not going to survive this. I am not going to survive this. And we now know that neurologically the kids are picking up on all our emotions. They picked up on them, especially in the womb. But even after they're born, they're picking up on everything you're feeling, and it's affecting the way they feel about themselves and even the way their brain grows. So I think that probably before we're going to be able to really get a handle on this thing of raising kids properly so that we don't have all these neurotic adults, we are going to have to give huge support to young parents. And I don't think it's just women. I think men have a tough time too, but men can at least disappear into their work. They need to disappear into their work, you know. But, yeah, women are stuck with it, and it's huge. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, cool. What about this part where I'm gonna change it just a little bit. Is that okay? Where Richard Nixon, when he was – I'm going to read this right here from page 176 – it says, former President Richard Nixon serves as an executive example of Phase 4 TMS. The exact evening he was pardoned in the Watergate scandal by President Ford, he developed left leg pain and was diagnosed with phlebitis. As his leg swelled three times its normal, after he was released from the hospital, however, his attorneys filed paperwork that would give him medical relief filing in the Watergate hearings. But when the request to avoid an appearance at the trial was rejected, his phlebitis soon after. So he never had to testify in the hearings. Due to medical reasons, his mind-body had unconsciously played out of what he didn't wish to consciously do. Illness has a definite purpose. Has there anybody on the phone ever not wanted to do something, and then all of a sudden you develop a symptom?
Oh yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, enjoy.
Well, I just bet you all of us have. I don't.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I want to hear somebody on here. I know Tennis Tom. What you doing, Tennis Tom? Tennis Tom.
Oh, I just listening. yeah. Well, no, I think I used to fake it well. If I had a test to take, like in school, and I really wasn't prepared for it, I would just stay in bed and annoy my mother. She knew I was faking it too. But I just say, no, I'm really sick. I really am sick. I knew I wasn't sick. I just didn't want to go to school, and I wasn't prepared for that test. But I was conscious of what I was doing, and she was too, but I just wore her down, so I don't think that's TMS.
Oh. Yeah, that seems like too, that's almost bordering on subconscious, but it isn't really the unconscious. The example that Steve gives of Cat Stevens having a bad record contract and then developing TB so he could go into an asylum and then he could recharge his creative batteries and come out of it with two or three devastating albums right afterwards. Some of his best work. It was like necessary downtime, what the English poet John Keats calls negative capability. But you don't think Cat Stevens just was faking TB a little bit to get out of it. It was some kind of unconscious intentionality that must have been very strong in him as a creative artist too, probably. That's the kind of examples I would look for. Things
Cat Stevens was great. Love Cat Stevens. I still do. I think in his case, I don't know much about tuberculosis, but maybe his autoimmune system, he got so low that his autoimmune system couldn't prevent it, and he got the bug.
I think a lot of creative personalities are like that, where they look calm on the outside, and when they're performing, but really inside this tremendous emotional energy is just rushing around. I think that's probably why musicians die young. The need to keep that, keep a lid on it while you're performing.
They're pretty neurotic lifestyle. There's a lot of booze and drugs and, late nights and not a very healthy lifestyle being a musician. Lou Reed, I guess he just passed away, but he was about 71. But a lot of screwed up musicians out there. But
I think you said I've been going over Lou's career since I saw him at the first performance in San Francisco of the.
I was there, man. You were there too. Fillmore Auditorium.
Yes.
Cool.
At
the Velvet Underground.
I met Andy Warhol and Allen Ginsberg upstairs at the old Fillmore. The actress Natasha Kaplanova introduced us.
Bruce. Wow.
it was a scene. I didn't know it. Natasha just took me there, and I was just totally innocent. I didn't know anything about these greats, but I got to meet them. But the thing was that Lou Reed totally cleaned up after the 70s, but he must have been boozing and coking and doing heroin nonstop for 10 years. Then he cleaned up and got into Tai Chi and everything. And then he gets to be about 70. And what he did to himself during those 10 years devastated his liver. And then I caught up with him when he was relatively normal with a sedate life, with a normal life. I think you see that a lot with those sort of binges like that. It takes, you don't know it at the time, but it's exacting tremendous toll on your basal metabolism.
I can't believe it. We were at Fillmore Auditorium the same night, and I was trying to remember just today who was there. It was Andy Warhol and Nico something, and they came out with a 5-foot long heroin needle, and he, like Lou Reed, like symbolically on stage, injected it into Nico, the girl, and I still have the poster for that concert.
That was a epic concert because it was before the release of the album.
It sounded epic. My arm hurt when he got done saying that.
Do you remember the two?
I got a meme coming through.
There were two dancers on stage who were whipping each other with whips.
Oh no, that's Tom's alley there.
Yeah, it was a happening all in New York, all of the '50s. Like, but anyway, so let's get back to
guys. Comedy. Y'all getting me wrapped up into this. I want to know the whole story. I want y'all to top it out so we can read the whole story.
When we're done, we can.
Y'all might can write a book on that one. Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
This is Philly Joe. Hello, everybody.
Oh, Philly Joe, good to hear from you, Philly Joe.
I would like to go ask a question, kind of what was talked earlier about symptoms that you may have had years ago coming back. I've been experiencing it. I was reading an older post by Dr. Schubner about symptoms moving and changing. And I've gone from the physical to the psychological, where my anxiety has been kicking in lately. And it's interesting. I'm not sure why at this time of year it does. So I just like some thoughts on that, how sometimes it can move. We know it moves physically in the body, but the aspect of it moving from a physical component of TMS to the psychological component of TMS.
You talking about anxiety?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
You mean psychological states, emotional states?
Yes, Bruce.
Rather than physical symptoms.
So like anxiety or depression symptom, as a TMS equivalent.
Yes, and I'll tell you, Forrest, I wasn't always a big believer in that up until recently, and it seems like the more I've started to believe in it, the more my symptoms have been coming back. As you know, you've kicked around some psychological...
Philly Joe, that's what's going to happen. As soon as you start learning about it, it's going to try to scare you away. It's going to try to say, hey, you know, you're catching on, and it's going to try to get you to stop, you know? So it's going to kind of heighten the stress, heighten the pain or whatever a little bit or a lot. And then if you hang in there, you'll eventually beat it, you know?
There's nothing like fear, though, to grab your attention, is there?
No, that's absolutely right, and that's what Dr. Schubner was talking about, that component of fear. And the personality type of that. And you know, I'm a long-time worrier, fearful type person, I think as many TSMers are. But any thoughts, I would like if anybody's got any thoughts on if that has changed with them, where it changes, where it switches from a back pain or a knee pain, and that goes away, but you're caught up with anxiety attack kind of stuff.
It's called an extinction burst. Is that not right, Forrest? An extinction burst? Is that what Alan Gordon calls it, I think?
So he calls an extinction burst the way that sometimes as you learn about TMS and you start to heal it, it gets worse all of a sudden. And all of a sudden, you'll have symptoms all over the place. So this could be an extinction burst where you're learning about TMS and all of a sudden new symptoms are popping up because you've made progress with your physical symptoms. And now it's kind of coming back to get you. It says, okay, maybe you aren't scared of, maybe I can't distract you with your physical symptoms anymore, but here's some anxiety. Try that on for size. But it seems like that's just the nature of the beast. Like TMS just travels around and that's just what it does. It's kind of a mystery how it does it.
But what I say is that this comes back at this time of year and now he's feeling anxiety. Whereas at one time it was pain. Did I get that wrong?
No, you were.
No, that's correct.
Well, a few weeks ago,
we were talking about anxiety as being when we started getting better, we started having anxiety attacks. That's what's happening to him, I think. That's what we were talking about a few weeks ago.
Well, let's let Enjoy finish, and then we'll go to Jay. How about that?
Yeah, Jay, you're right after her, buddy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if this were happening to me, I would think about what happened in the fall at this time of year in the past. If it were me, there'd be something, and it just coming back to haunt me. I don't know how many times I've seen friends They go into a depression, they, for example, and they have no idea what's going on. And then, you know, somebody reminds me, well, isn't this where your wife died 20 years ago or something like that, eh? And they had completely repressed that. They weren't thinking about it at all. But right on the day or a day or two before the day, they get depressed. So yeah, that's what I would look at if it were me, Silly Joe, because anxiety is just one more form of TMS. That's all it is. It's a nice change from physical pain, but not a very nice change.
Yeah, I try not to think. I do look back on certain things. Part of me, though, and I think the clinical social work part of me tries not to dwell too much obsessive on that, because I think that can cause anxiety too. So that's kind of where I'm at tonight.
Absolutely.
Okay. Jay, did you want to say anything? There does seem to be
this, psychosymbolical kind of attribute to TMS and to autoimmune disorders, stress-related illnesses. And that comes up in this section that Steve has on Dana Reeve, who was Christopher Reeve's caregiver, who, after her husband died, well, if we all, I don't know, all of us over 10 years old know about Christopher Reeve, Superman, falling off his horse and hitting his head and then being paralyzed and then heroically carrying on with the aid of his wife, Dana. But then Steve Ozanich points out that after Christopher's death, Dana developed lung cancer and died of that. And then he
was it like 2 months later?
Very soon, yeah. Let me see.
Real soon.
And then he says caregivers have a high illness rate, which is something that Gabor Mate observes, but there's this symbolic element to it too, because Christopher Reeve had always had to be watched because he had trouble breathing and communicating, and so she had to hold his head at a certain angle. And so it was an item of a concern. And then Steve points out that she developed lung cancer with no prior exposure to secondhand smoke, mm-hmm. and she did not smoke cigarettes herself. And he points at that kind of symbolic correlation that we notice about seasons. Like if somebody died at a certain time, I know my father died in March, and I'm always going symptomatic the first few weeks of March. So it's like a big symbolic cycle of some kind. And then you see it's like homeopathic with Dana and Chris, Christopher, developing a disease that approximated conditions he had. There's some kind of strange symbolic logic going on in this that Steve only hints at. I know I've seen it. I know it's uncanny how the unconscious works. It's you're getting into this dark area, you know, when you open the door into the basement and look down into the darkness. There's this kind of, it's almost like astrology, numerology, alchemy. Kind of.
I agree with Bruce. TMS is weird. If I can get back to Philly Joe on his anxiety thing. And Philly Joe, anxiety is what Dr. Sarna calls an affective TMS symptom. And if you look up, if you have a psychology book or a wiki, affective is a the same psychological terms. So it's depression, anxiety, emotional equivalence. But if you understand when it hits you, that it is depression, anxiety, all these equivalents, they are TMS equivalents. It's TMS, just like if your back hurt You know, I had an attack once. I had an anxiety attack, first time in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I was having a heart attack. I guess I survived. I went to my doctor the next day. I thought I had a heart attack. So he puts me on the treadmill, and he realized, no, he said, yeah, you had a panic attack. And he gave me a prescription for this stuff called Xanax. So he said, Tom, if you know, take one of the whatever if you feel anxious again. So I've got it in my medicine cabinet. I don't think I've ever dropped one. But if I ever see the mushroom cloud, I'm taking the whole frickin' bottle. And dated January 13th, 06. So this happened, you know, if you think you're dying of a heart attack, that will create great anxiety. And I've had one other 10 years later, an anxiety attack, same thing. But it was anxiety with TMS, but it was right after a traumatic incident, but it was like a couple of days later. So the anxiety attack did not hit till a few days, and I kind of reviewed what had gone on the week before, and I had a very traumatic incident happen that was okay, and it didn't hit me till a few days afterwards.
Then that's phase four. That's delayed onset. There's a
pause.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a classic example of it, really.
So maybe get some Xanax or something like that. Go to your doctor, a competent doctor.
I've heard about all the cautions of that. I wouldn't be touching it.
Well, he was a wise old doctor. I wouldn't drop a whole bunch, but maybe a couple of shots of whiskey will do the same thing. You know?
I think you've watched too much Lou Reed, Tennis Tom.
Billy Joe, you still on here, right?
I'm still here, yes, sir.
Okay. Did you ever get Steve's book? Did you ever get a chance to get his book?
I have not got his book, no.
Okay, because on page 170, he does bring up, you know, that if you can become consciously aware, and this is on page 170 down at the bottom, he says if you can become consciously aware of tension levels and also the shadow-ego relationship, it's sort of like the id superego ego relationship, you know what I'm talking about with that?
I do.
Okay. It can stave off an attack when accompanied by understanding, breathing, mindfulness, and relaxation. So, you know, this is the part where you know tension's there. You know tension's all around you. You know you're having stress. You know, it's not the subconscious tension. I'm talking about where you know it's there. Then you
right.
can do things, you know, to get it to calm down.
I understand that. I think my frustration, maybe along with many other TMSers, is, you know, I'm doing the work, conscious of it. Gosh darn it, I just, there are some times when I just want to feel normal a couple days in a row. Does anybody feel like that sometimes?
Yes.
I do a lot of addiction work, and it's funny because the people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol, I clearly tell them, look, recovery is a process. Recovery is a process. You got to work at it. I have a hard time following my own therapeutic instructions that this work in TMS is a process. But sometimes, and I've been wanting to ask if anybody else feels like this, so I know I'm not alone. I get tired of having to work at this. I would just like a couple days where I could just be normal and not have to always be thinking about how I feel. That's something that I really struggle with. Thinking about how I feel so much. So I'm always trying to think about a negative feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you take time to just go out just for Philly Joe time? You know, just for some me time? I mean, just to get away from everything?
I think I told the wrong guy to take a bottle of Xanax and a couple of shots of whiskey. Sorry, Philly Joe, but I was talking somewhat hyperbolically. I think sometimes, you know, if it gets to be too much, like you're saying, you'd like to have a couple of days off from this, I think, paralysis by analysis. Maybe you just need to go to the beach or get to, I'll tell you, I cannot recommend, as everyone has seen, reading a TMS book or Steve's book, Shit, I've been trying to get through it for like 2 years now. If it weren't for this group meeting, I would never get through it. But it's forcing me to read it. But it is just so, it's like James Michener of TMS and the narrative of his own personal life. And once you've absorbed his this tome here, this textbook on TMS, I think you'll get it. Just reading his book, you know, reading his book a couple of pages a day helps me a lot. Just so get his book and read a couple of pages a day, and maybe it'll help you out too.
Okay.
Yeah, make sure you get that me time. Make sure you get away and do what Joe likes to do. Do what Joe had a good time doing, like when you was a child, maybe 14, 15 years old. You might have used to go fishing, or you might have used to play basketball, or something that you.
Wait a minute! I can't play basketball. Remember, I got a bad knee.
Well, when the knee gets better.
No, I'm only kidding.
But go sit down and throw some baskets. You know.
Nope.
I think Herbie is absolutely right. If I can jump in a little bit, I think Herbie
please.
Is absolutely right. We all work so hard at our TMS, and
yes.
to some degree, we just have to let go. We have to say, you know what? How am I feeling right now? Am I feeling okay? Great. Go with it. Turn the brain off and just live your life. Be present. It's all about being present in the moment. Just enjoy it. And then maybe you can check in occasionally and say, you know, am I stressed about something? And if you're stressed, handle that, then get back in your life. Get back present in the moment. Enjoy your life. It's all about that.
And also,
it's all about that.
Yeah.
We were.
Great. Thank you.
And
thank you.
Amen.
Also, you know, Enjoy has a thing that's a list that she's doing. It's called Parts Therapy that really helps with this too, Philly Joy.
Enjoy, do you want to jump in and tell us a little bit about that maybe?
Yeah,
I'd enjoy that because that really struck a chord when you said, Silly Joel, that even the day after day after day, I mean, I don't know how many days I would have totally agreed with you. But lately I've been using internal family systems, and basically the process is quick. As soon as you notice you've got a problem, you notice you're anxious, you're in pain, whatever the heck it is, and you say, hey, this might be TMS. You go in and you talk to this part of you that's all fluffed up about something. You get its trust, you listen to it, you help it, you unburden it, and off it goes. Like, it often takes me an hour or less to work through an anxiety attack that would have been debilitating for days. So, everybody knows I'm the parts lady right now, and Forrest has put together this great mailing list, and
You've put together the great mailing list, but keep going.
I like it, because there's a lot of good stuff there. And anybody else who's listening, love to.
Don't you think it takes an awful long time, though? Isn't there like a long delay before you recognize its TMS up to its tricks again? I know I started getting pain in my wrist, in my left wrist, and I said, how did I do that? There wasn't anything that I did. And then I realized it was growing of its own accord. And then I stopped paying attention to it. I said, well, could this be? But it takes quite a while for you to recognize those symptoms as being masquerades. I don't recognize it right away. Like, oh boy, I'll just go in there and start my internal family systems and mediate between the id and the superego and the family parts. It's not like you can just jump on it like that.
It does take time. There's no doubt about it. But I'm just getting faster at it, because what happens to me is I have a tendency to wake up in the middle of the night and really start worrying about something. And it'll be something that I can't do one thing about.
Hell, I can jump all over that.
Dealt with...
Tagged me good.
Where are you going to get to, Jay?
That is the unconscious mind right there. Those hours of the night.
Hey, when you wake up at night, though, is there someone in bed next to you and you want to turn on the TV or read a book or turn on your computer, and you're sitting there ruminating, looking at the ceiling, because that person next to you, you know, is going to be disturbed and is going to be saying, turn it off. You know, so now if I wake up and ruminate, I want to, you know, I'm happy when I'm alone because I can turn on the TV and do whatever I want. And I use those couple of hours after I found out here, actually from someone, about segmented sleep, waking up in the middle of the night, that is normal and it's quiet. And now I just turn on the TV, I turn on the computer, read something, and enjoy the productivity of those 2 hours. But do you all have someone next to you who you got to stare at the ceiling for 2 hours because you're wide awake, and they would be disturbed if you did that?
Well, I go in the living room because, you know, you're quite right. You can't do that to other people. But no, I'm talking about not a situation where you wake up and you're kind of thinking about stuff. So like you say, you enjoy the productivity of the time. That's wonderful. But I'm talking about times when I wake up and I cannot get back to sleep because my mind is just starting to race in some old pattern. And so I notice it's TMS pretty fast these days because otherwise my whole night is shot. And then I'm getting older and I can't stay up all night and still carry on the next day without repercussions.
Are you aware of the segmented sleep thing that it's normal in non-Western societies to wake up and that's the normal sleep pattern? And that you should not feel bad, that it's not insomnia, it's normal.
No, it's completely normal. In fact, it's referred, now what's it called? It's a pre-industrial societies, because now we got to get up at 7 o'clock so you can be at work by 8 o'clock, but, you know, blah, 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 all day long. Well, they were on a more flexible schedule, so it was perfectly normal to sleep for a few hours and get up and wander around and do some work and talk to some folks, whoever happens to be up, and then a few hours later go back to bed and finish your sleep. And it was called, I know what it was called. It was called first sleep and second sleep. It's usually in two seconds. Yeah, it's a much more
segmented sleep.
Yeah, but you can't do it if you've got a job and you've got to get up, and that's all there is to that, eh?
Okay, well, I'm semi-retired, so I get up when I want. But, when you need sleep, you sleep, you know. They did research about marathon runners. They would have pre-race insomnia the night before, and then they did research. They found out there was no loss of time of ability if they lost a night's sleep. They performance. There's no down performance due to pre-event insomnia. So it's not that terrible a thing to, you know, you just, yeah, take a nap.
Well, I can have this to me night after night, though, because it really is true anxiety, you know, and the anxiety is, I guess, you know, like Dr. Sarno says, anxiety is TMS. So what that's saying to me is that your brain is becoming anxious so that you won't think about what you really can't handle, right? You're ruminating about something. Okay, it's a problem, but you know, you're not getting any deeper. And so that's why I get up and I just go into the process and I do an IFS. I talk to the part till I find who wants to talk to me, and I do an IFS session, you know. And I've
it
only been
work.
Doing this for a few months. I mean, it's not like it's difficult or anything. And so many people on the mailing list are starting to say, but this is makes so much sense. This is like this, it's not a hard thing to accept. Once you spend a little bit of time with your parts, you suddenly find out that you've got a whole different dimension of yourself that you've been neglecting. And I'm sorry to go on and on because, probably people are sick of it. But anyway, I had to say that because I can't stand it when I see somebody suffering and I feel like I might have an answer for them.
So does it help you get back to sleep and joy?
Oh, yeah. An hour later, I'm totally resolved, and I go back to sleep. Yeah.
So it's a good solution. That's what it's all about. It's about finding a solution. I think it is key to quiet the brain. It's all about quieting the brain.
Well, it is all about resetting the brain, and how do you do that, eh? Because, but you know, I mean, the thing is, it doesn't mean you'll ever be anxious again, because we all have lots of parts, right? And there might be all kinds of parts that you haven't talked to in 50 years, or in my case, 50 years. And I've been neglecting them so long, you know, that I have
to... How do you get in touch with those parts?
What's that?
How do you get in touch with those parts?
Well, it's just like you'd do if there was a person standing in the room with you. You say hello, you know. And oftentimes in the beginning, it really doesn't want to talk to you because you haven't been a friend. You haven't been there for it. But if you say, you know, I understand now that I do have parts. I do have an internal family system, and I really do want to talk to you, and I'm going to prove that you can trust me. And, like, the whole point is that you have to find your leader within, you know. You have a part of you that can talk to a part without getting judgmental and that sort of thing. And so you got to read the book.
Okay.
Therapy is a fabulous book, and you can get it on Kindle for less than $10, and I just so recommend it. Yeah.
Well, say it again. We were breaking up, and I missed that.
Jay Early, and it's EARLEY, and
okay.
It's called Self-Therapy. It's actually got a real long title, but Self-Therapy is all you need, and you can on Amazon and probably other
big. Okay.
Yeah.
Jay, if you send me an email, forest@tmswiki.org, I can put you on the mailing list and you'll hear all about it. We can send you some free resources too.
You talking to me?
Oh yeah. I was saying if you
okay.
send me an email, Jay, I'll put you on the email list and there'll be some free resources you can look into too.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of information already on the mailing list, even though it's brand new. And there's a lot of people besides me who think this is really helping them.
Okay.
So I hope people will join.
That was awesome, Enjoy. That was awesome. Anybody else got any questions about parts or what we've been talking about with the onset?
Is the id a part? Is that an example
yes.
of a part?
Yes.
What is besides ego and superego? What would be say that? What would be another part?
Well, I'll tell you one part that everybody has is the inner critic. And
inner
I've just
critic.
Been reading about the inner critic, and they say that actually there's quite a few different kinds of inner critic. If you were really harmed when you were a very small baby, sometimes you have a destroyer. Isn't that a lovely thing to carry around with you?
Right.
And the destroyer wants you dead. It says you're not worth it. You didn't do it right. Your parents didn't love you. That kind of thing.
No, they did not. I was taught that very well.
Yeah. And
so,
a lot of that, and that's a huge, huge thing, right? Huge
so
thing.
Enjoy this. This
a perfectionist, this, something like that. Just do it right, or you'll get in trouble. Always
this,
do
this,
it right.
This destroyer part, does it have a positive intent at all?
They all have a positive intent, every single one of them. They think that if they don't keep you down, that you're going to get really, really hurt. So they're really it's really primitive, and it really says rude, mean, bad things to you, but it's just trying to kill the life energy in you because it thinks that your environment will not allow you to live.
So you think of these then as these parts as defenses.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Well, what they're doing is they're protectors of a wounded child. They're looking after a baby who was hurt badly, or a 3-year-old, or a 6-year-old, or a 10-year-old. Or, you know, I mean, of course it can happen at any time.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're defenses, but we call those parts, in IFS, they call those parts protectors. And what the protector is doing is protecting an exile. And an exile is usually a very young, badly hurt. They were not able to defend themselves, so they disappeared into the subconscious, and the brain wants them to stay there because it hurts to let them out. So what protectors do is they try and keep the exile, who are these little wounded child parts, try to keep them from hurting and try and keep them from coming out so they don't bother our daily life. You know, so everybody's got these little I don't know what to call them, you know, parts. It's all you can call them, eh? But we've all got them because every child has been hurt, even ones with, you know, with great parents. And what happens is, like, have you ever said to yourself, why did I just say that? Like, why did I do that? I ruined a relationship. I insulted my boss. You know, something that I would never have done if I was in my right mind. Well, that's a part, our protector part. It's jumped out and it's, you know, something that the boss said reminded her. He said, oh, no, somebody's going to hurt my exile here. And so they say, you know, they give the boss a shot. Well, the boss backs off, but the result for your life is terrible, you know. So what happens if you start talking to these parts, they will begin to trust you. They will tell you their story. Once they know that you understand, then they will let you help them and they will let go of this awful burden that they've been carrying for many, many, many years. They'll let go of it, and all of a sudden, that problem will be out of your life. Now, you might have 10 exiles with a similar problem, you know, so you have to keep working. But every time you help one of these parts, understand that it is no longer alone. You're here to help it. You are now being responsible for the family system, you know, then that part can let go and you will feel better.
And that
happened for me.
Can I make a basic little sentence, enjoy, that might help everybody understand the,
sure,
the deeper extent or the lighter extent of what you're saying? Jay, like you might say, you know, well, part of me wants to do that, but another part of me doesn't want to do that. Well,
right.
if you really want to do it, Jay, the part of you that doesn't want to go do it, you can actually sit down and find out, you know, reason with that part that doesn't want to do it, and find out what it's in, why it doesn't want you to go do it. And then you can reason with it. And instead of going and building tension and building stress because you got a part that didn't want to go, you actually come together and you lose that tension. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, that's what enjoy, just to make it basic, that's what the enjoy is talking about. And there's a lot more parts than that, of course. And that's what she's talking about.
Okay.
She says parts.
Yeah, that's perfect, Kirby. Thank you so much. It's really simple, and I don't mean to complicate it. Yeah.
But there's a lot more to it. And that's what you're talking about, enjoy, and we really appreciate you doing that.
So, Enjoy, you're saying that the tension between these warring parts, protectors and what are the other ones called?
The exiles.
Well,
exiles
are
behind the tension that is the T in TMS.
Yeah.
The driving force.
It's not the exiles fight. They're too busy hiding, generally speaking. Like, they're not out there causing trouble, but protectors are causing trouble. Because one protector is saying, you know, get out there and be a success, and another protector is saying, if you do that, people are going to hurt you. Right? And you've got these, you have warring parts in the sense that they do not agree with each other necessarily. They're like everybody else. They don't agree. So then you get, it gets a little more complicated, but really, not really. You have to talk to both of them. You have to help them let go of that burden they've been carrying. You have to get them to make a little compromise here. Like for example, a lot of people have a part that wants to work all the time. Oh, you got a slave, or you're gonna starve to death. That's all there is to it. And another part wants to go out and play, for goodness sake, right? And you have to negotiate a compromise between those two parts. They're not necessarily going to go disappear completely, because, yes, you should work hard to make a living, but you also should play. Those are legitimate points of view, right? And what's happening, instead of letting them talk, you're just saying they're fighting with each other. And whenever you're out playing, you're feeling like you should be working. And whenever you're working, you're annoyed because you want to be out playing. Like, what kind of sense does that make? So it's really, honestly, it's just like good communication between two friends. Except this is you, and every part wants you to have a good life, wants you to reach your goals and be happy.
It's parts of your personality, you got a lot of parts to your personality. A lot of us think, well, that's just my personality. No, you got a lot of parts to your personality, right, Enjoy?
And if they're not causing any trouble, then that's fine, you know, because lots of parts are perfectly peaceful. Have a nice, or somebody, like, say, for example, you were yelled at a lot when you were a kid, and so somebody yells at you, and what you do is you just say, okay, well, let me think about that, and excuse me, and you go off and you think about it, right? And then you come back with a solution. Well, that part is helpful, right? But it's the parts that do things that get you into trouble and cause you TMS pain that you need to deal with, right?
Enjoy. What is the name of that book one more time?
Need to let X, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Lenore says to Forrest, that's the id and the superego. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sure that's true.
The title of that book?
Sure. But I just find it easier to think of them and they're of me, they're not me, right? They are parts of me. They are fragments who have been hurt, and I need to bring them back into life.
What is the title of Early's book in that regard again?
Self-therapy.
I'm sorry, I'm missing it. I'm breaking up a little bit. I'm not hearing.
Self-therapy?
I heard therapy, and that's all.
I think you have to bring these parts back in your mind and your heart so that they are doing what you want to do with your life. It's your goals, your values. You don't have a part that wants to hide when you're a person who wants to be out there with people and have good relationships with people, right? You have to.
Herbie, I'm not hearing well. You said something.
It's
therapy.
It's self, yeah, like yourself is self therapy.
Self therapy, okay.
Yeah,
self-led.
I couldn't.
Exactly. It's the wonderful thing about it is you don't.
I'm sorry, folks. I'm breaking up. I'm not hearing well. I'm probably gonna cut off.
I can hear you real clear, Herbie.
I know, okay. Usually that's how it is. People can hear me, but I can't hear y'all good. So.
I'm going to email the name of the book to Jay.
Okay. Yeah. He's going to email you, Jay.
Okay. Thanks, man.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Good book.
Enjoy.
Yeah?
You want to finish?
Well, I just want to say that all this stuff is on the mailing list, and there's tons of websites and wonderful YouTubes and great books. And it's all available, and we'd just love to have you. And all you have to do is email Forrest, forrest@tmswiki.org. Give him your email address and say, I want to be on the mailing list. And there's not a huge number of people or anything, and there's lots of really good conversations. And if you don't like it, you can just go click, and we're gone.
So why not give it a try? That's all I got to say.
I was going to ask Leonore or Surfside. Do y'all got any questions? Leonore, Surfside, do y'all have any questions about anything?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, I thought you couldn't hear me.
Yeah,
I was having problems a little bit ago, but I hear fine now.
I'm just listening to it because I can relate to a lot of Angel is saying. When I was a kid, we had a violent military coup, and I remember that I just couldn't say anything because there was so much tragedy around me that, you know, we just had it strong, and I think that really affected all of us, all my family.
Yeah. Oh, then that's where Enjoy really be able to help you the parts therapy.
Yeah, and that's the way, you know, that's the way I usually behave. I'm very strong, and I never complain, and I'm, you know, but then I've had a lot of physical pain due to this reaction of that we had.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That sounds like a good thing to be aware of.
Any questions about TMS, Leonore?
No, you know what happened to me, if what you were talking about earlier, that, you know, I studied the therapy with Dr. Sarno, and then, well, with the books, and then with Schubiner, and it got worse. I got a lot of depression, and my pain, I don't have a very acute pain, but I have a constant pain, and I am always tired, and that makes me not wanting to do a lot of stuff that I used to do, because I'm so tired.
Enjoy? Does that sound like something for Wynn?
That's like CFS.
So that's what I'm trying to overcome, enjoy life more than what I do now.
Mm-hmm. I like that, enjoy life. Wow. Okay. Well, so just keep coming to these discussions, and it's going to work. It's going to work. Just have you been to the forum, Leonore?
This is, I think, the third time, and I've been on the chat 2 times, I think. Yeah, and I always go to the lists and to the, you know, to the wiki, TMS wiki. Actually, I came back because I was out for some time. Because I didn't have the energy, actually. But now I realize I have to hang in there.
I recognize your name now. Yeah, Leonore. You posted as Leonore on the forum, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, welcome back. Yeah, I mean, I think the TMS treatment is the same no matter what your symptoms are. Sometimes it takes a while. There are different approaches, and we've kind of seen that here tonight, where some people will say, go for the deep work, you got to figure it out. I'm of more of the opinion that, you know, it's more about kind of just not letting the symptoms get you down. They're there to distract you. They want you to be focused on them, and so your job is to not be focused on them. But, you know, so you just you try different approaches and see what works for you. What were you going to say?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, you know, concentrating much on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there an approach that you're using right now, Leonore?
Yes. I listen to a lot of. I'm listening to audios to Dr. Schubiner, and I also like this. What is his name? This English guy. He has relaxation tapes. What is his name? I don't remember his name now. But that's what I do when I wake up and I feel I can't sleep and I am depressed. I listen to those, and I also do a lot of meditation and relaxation. And, you know, that helps me right now. And I walk a lot. I live close to the beach, so that's what I do.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay, so how long have you been back now? A month? 2 months?
No, I think 2 weeks. I came back
2 weeks? Okay. Well, Okay, well, we're glad to have you back. And, you know, by listening to us talking to Philly Joe a little bit earlier, it takes a little while, you know, to let it sink in. And you had mentioned that, you know, when you had started, I guess, earlier this year or maybe last year, that the pain increased.
Yes, so, the pain increased.
Yeah, so this time, if the pain increases at all, do whatever you can do not to fear it, okay? I know it hurts, but do whatever you can do not to fear it and focus on it and get your mind, like you said a while ago, get your mind on, you know, boy, have you heard Claire Weeks? Have you heard Claire Weeks?
I've heard about,
get those audios. Get the audios off TMS Wiki that's on there and listen to them. They'll help you lose that fear of the pain.
Claire Weeks is excellent for managing anxiety. For anyone here on this call
and
who's
depression.
Been dealing with anxiety, Claire Weeks is really good with that. She's helped a lot of people. Jan A., who used to be on the forum a lot, she helped her so much. Yeah.
Yeah, she helped me too a lot, Forrest, Bruce, Tom. She enjoys. She's really helped me a lot. I'm really excited about Enjoy's Parts Therapy because I've delved into that quite a bit in the past. Just didn't follow all the way through with it, but I am this time. Go ahead, Bruce.
Oh, what Steve seems to be saying in this chapter, by way of a conclusion, is that he doesn't outline any specific approach that you're supposed to adopt, but he says that recovery involves moving from these beta states of consciousness, anxiety-ridden states of consciousness, into an alpha state, which is a creative, athletes call it being in the zone. And he's saying somehow that this downtime you're giving yourself with TMS is actually an opportunity for you to move on to renew your creative juices and move on to a more effective level of accomplishment. And I see this family parts thing as moving from beta to alpha. It's figuring out a way to put the jigsaw puzzle back together to achieve unity of consciousness in this new mode. I guess that's the word I would use. It's like if anxiety is a mode of consciousness, then this alpha state is a mode of consciousness too, a new feeling in your head, a new way of seeing things. And that's just what I come away with from
so
the
many
chapter
resources.
With.
There's so many resources, and I, you know, over the years, they have been so helpful. To me, it's like you do what works, eh? You do what works.
That's
if
right,
something,
bravo.
Yeah.
If something isn't working, then you got to find something that does. And it's out there. There's no doubt about it. For me right now, it's parts work. But I appreciate there's all kinds of wonderful things. It's just that as over time, things have a tendency to become more refined and a little more elegant, and we understand a little more, and you know, so it's a wonderful process. I am so grateful for this wiki. You know, Forrest, I want to tell you that you know, thank you so much for all your hard work. You're a heck of a guy.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
Yeah,
absolutely, I'll second that, man.
Yay!
Well, I am really excited about this parts therapy mailing list that you're putting together. I think it's so exciting to see you, you know, working through the discussion and stuff. It's exciting to see. I actually kind of think I'd be interested to see if we could get Bruce on this list. I think he would add a lot.
That would be nice.
He's got that mind for it. I think he would.
I've 90%
eat this stuff up.
90% theory. And every once in a while, I actually get a glimmer of what the real substance is.
Well, you know, maybe this'll channel that theory, because there's a lot of theory in there, and it helps you It helps you see what's going on. It helps you focus in on those different parts of you.
And you'll ask
them a little
questions.
Better.
You'll ask questions. You'll say, hey, what about this? You know, get off the airy-fairy.
I can log on to that list. I see that on the wiki, right? On the forum?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I see people in the going through a progress as they appear on the TMS forum where they're trying to do it all in one swallow to start with.
Oh,
and they have
yeah.
this tremendous obsessive work ethic.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I recognize in them myself at that stage. And
yeah.
now I'm getting a little bit more bored with the process because
yeah.
my symptoms are retreating and it's not as urgent and I'm not applying that workaholic, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder,
yeah.
personality traits.
It'll make it stay. Being that way will make the pain stay longer. Sarno said himself,
yeah.
you know,
exactly.
you get
I
like
think,
that,
I think
you won't
see
get
people
rid of
coming,
it.
Coming in a beta state of consciousness with high anxiety, and they think
mm-hmm.
they're just going to apply all that in this work ethic.
Well,
I've been
good job bringing it back,
this,
Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been roaring through these 37 days now. I see people writing, I'm on day 10. Like they're just
yeah,
thinking,
why ain't I healed? Why ain't I healed? I'm on day
yeah,
10. Well, okay, we need to go a little further. Yeah, I had somebody correct me the other day. And, you know, basically I could tell by the post that they were, you know, trying to cram it all in there, you know, like a test before the night
a
before
test.
A big test. And I was letting them know just to calm down, let it spread out over time, quit keeping up with the time, and let the healing occur on its own. Sort of, whoever it was, I can't remember, but when they came back to let me know that that's the way they learn, that's the way they like to learn, and if they wouldn't cramming, then they wouldn't doing it right because they've always done it that way. Well, you know, myself, my whole life, I've always loved to read a lot of books and study and all that. I've done that my whole life. That's kind of my hobby. Well, it is my hobby. But at the same time, I had to learn when I came into TMS Healing Knowledge Therapy, I had to learn to slow it down, to
yeah.
really get all the juice, you know, out of each book, out of each page. I had to slow it down, stop, and get it sunk in my brain because any other time when I would read through a book, I'd grasp it, I'd understand. But I wouldn't get all of it, you know? And when you come to TMS Healing Knowledge Therapy, you need to get it all. You need to know how not to fear. You need to know how to focus. And you need to know how, you know, to conduct yourself throughout the day. Because it is a lifestyle change. And this is one therapy that you need to take everything and make that lifestyle change. And then you heal. And well, after the conditioning, you know, you'll be healed before even the conditioning fixes itself. But you really need to get serious with that if you want to come out of that, like I was laying in the bed for a year. Hey, I had to get serious with it. And when Sarno said, hey, you know, you really need to read over it and then read the book again and then read the book again and then read the book again. Well, that's what I did. And I started doing it over and over and over and over. And that's when it clicked with me. And people want that click. We want to get that click and say,
that
I got
click.
It. I finally got it. I got it. I know what he means. And really, it's sort of an unconscious thing. It's sort of it's just you get into your subconscious, you know, after 30 to 60 days of studying it, and it's there. But everybody here, we've all heard somebody say, hey, I read that book, and I read it, you know, in 3 days. And it didn't do nothing for me. Well, we know why, you know, because this is knowledge
yeah.
therapy. It's about knowing the knowledge. The knowledge is what cures you. No matter how, you know, don't get me wrong. The knowledge therapy is good. And then we understand about the meditations and all that other that calms down the rage soothe ratio, you know, because we real tense people. And then we have to calm down that tension that's been built up from the hurt, from the stuff we've been through our whole lives. And, you know, you the knowledge therapy is what heals you, but at the same time, you've got to keep to do a lifestyle change and calm yourself down. Because our whole lives we've been what you call perfectionists. We'll work 20 hours a day if we could. You know, there's a bit to learn, but at the same time, let that knowledge sink in. You know, talk about every week, every time we. But at the same time, don't let it become a burden. Don't let it become a burden where I have to do this. Oh gosh, I didn't get my study in today, so you know I'm going to be missing out on something. Don't let that happen either. You know, keep it in the middle of the road. Okay, anybody else got anything to say?
All talked out. Please start up.
Okay, thanks. Praise God.
A lot.
Anybody got anything else to say? It's about that time, guys. So if anybody else has got anything to say, we'll go on. If not, we'll call it a night and go to chapter 12 next week.
Excellent.
Okay.
Good.
Great.
Yeah, good job.
Guys,
I'm getting hungry. Let's go.
All right.
Let's go.
Thank you.
Next week, everybody.
Okay, thank you, Forrest.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Night, all.
Bye, buddy. I like that, y'all. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to cut it off, okay?
Okay.
And that's the end of the show. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
Amen.